A quick note that this next story deals with suicide. If you want to pass on it, you can tune back in about 10 minutes. In the Lower Queen Anne neighborhood of Seattle, on Tuesday nights, the doors of St. Paul's Episcopal Church open up, and inside is a unique art space. It's run specifically for people with mental illness and homelessness to have a place to create. Kay Eaton runs the mental health chaplaincy here, and she manages this program, which is called the Karen Korn Project. We'll hear why in a minute.
So we have just different kinds of creative projects. We have jewelry making, we have knitting, I'm a knitter, and we have a couple other knitters, sketchbooks, we have watercolors, we have coloring books.
The piano you hear comes courtesy of Brenda Neff, a musician and writer who's been intimate with mental illness and with the power of art to help people struggling with it.
When there are spaces in your life where you can't articulate because your mind is so in a quandary, the creative arts are absolutely essential and are the cornerstone for our spirituality, whatever it may be. And I think it's there that we can find our unity and our healing for our minds and our souls. I had become psychotic and was on the streets, and I had lost contact with my family, and one of the processes that had brought me back to reality was losing my most valuable thing in my life at that point that I carried with me was my flute. So I lost the flute, and then Kay Eaton and I had a ceremony letting go of the flute, which was such a powerful part of me, and using a new flute to bring in the new me. And so my goal in life is to use my words and my music in a very spiritual, healing way.
The Karen Korn Project is named after a young woman who fought her own battles. Her mother, Pat Swain, founded the project as a way to salvage some meaning from Karen's tragic story. We sat in a couple of armchairs off to the side of the art space, and she told me about her daughter.
And she was a very creative child. I remember once she went around the neighborhood with a questionnaire looking for friends. And I think she was about 5 years old at the time. They had to fill out the questionnaire. But that was Karen. And when she hit puberty, we started having a few problems. Karen, at that point in her life, was very melancholy. It was kind of like a dark shadow that, you know, followed her around. She was a ski racer, and they had a private ski academy in Girdwood, this little town, and she went there for her senior year of high school. So she really wasn't much into, you know, all of the cliques and the normal high school things, but she made great friends there, and she loved it. And then she went away to college in California, and I know she got into drinking. And I think it was her sophomore year, I got a call from one of the counselors that said that they were sending her home.
Karen took some time at home. She got sober and mentally healthier and managed to return to college in LA. She finished her degree and began to get work in movies and TV. And then she moved closer to home, to Portland.
One night, I think it was actually Easter, we got a phone call at home from her boyfriend that he was worried about her and that she wasn't answering her phone. So I did what, you know, what you can do when you're living 3 hours away from someone. I called the police and asked them to do a wellness check on her, and they did. But that kind of ran a wedge between us because she didn't like the idea that I called the police. And about a year, maybe less than a year after she moved down to Portland, I got a letter from her. And it was just this horrible letter about, I don't want to ever see anybody again. It's just very hurtful, very striking out against all of us. And I didn't know what had triggered it. You know, it's heartbreaking. You think you know your child, and then something like that happens, and you can't figure out why. We didn't see each other for quite a while. And then one day she called and wanted me to come to Portland, but I had to come by myself or she would kill whoever came with me. It was very erratic, and so we called her doctor, and the doctor said, call the police. And so I started down to Portland, and my husband called the police, and they went to her apartment, and she wouldn't let them in. So they finally got a key from the manager, and when they came into the apartment, she tried to jump off the balcony, and they caught her. And they ended up having to wrestle her to the floor and, you know, handcuff her, take her into the ambulance. So the summer of 2014, she was living in this little house in Portland. We were supporting her. And that summer, she decided to move out of the house. When she moved out of the house, she sort of moved out of our lives, too. And she got very aggressive and very threatening. She told us she was coming to Port Townsend and she was going to kill us. And we actually went and got a restraining order. And the thing was that there just didn't seem to be any help. She had been trying to get Social Security disability, and she kept getting turned down for that. So from that summer of 14 until October, we hadn't heard from her. And all I knew is she was living in her car. And then she contacted us in late October. And I got together with her, and, you know, we cried and hugged and talked. And I think she was embarrassed by all the things that had happened and the things that she had said. I think she felt like it was hopeless, like she was never going to be able to get back to a place where she could support herself or pay off her debts or whatever, you know, and have a life. Thanksgiving was coming, and I asked her if I could come, and she said yes. That's all she said was yes. And when I got off the ferry, I called her, and there was no answer, which is unusual. But when I got to her place, her roommate was there, and we opened the door to Karen's room, and she was hanging. She had hung herself from the skylight, and she... You know, there's no way to explain what that was like. People talk about having a broken heart. I honestly felt like my heart had been ripped out of me. And, you know, there's not a day that goes by that I don't think about her. I think about all the things that she missed and things that, you know, she never got a chance to have a family of her own. Sometimes I see people out that look like her, and I follow them. There would be times I'd be in my car, and I would just scream as loud as I could scream. But a lot of times it's just this empty feeling. They had a memorial for her in Los Angeles, and they sent me the book from that. The things that people wrote in the book were like, she was such a big part of their life and how she helped them cope, and, you know, that she was so strong. And you know, I think about that and I think, you know, why? You know, why did you give up? And, you know, I don't know. And then on top of everything else, see, she died in November. And I think it was January or February, Social Security paid her disability, which was almost like a slap in the face. Because I think had they come through, I think it would have stopped her. I think that would have been the hope that she felt like she needed, that she had would have had some income of her own. And then since she had no family, no heirs, the money went to me, and that's the money we used to start this project.
Pat Swain got together with Kay Eaton, the chaplain. They talked over different ways to honor Karen's memory, and they found themselves drawn back to the importance of creativity in Karen's life.
Karen was very artistic, and we knew we wanted to do something around the arts. Karen, because I think Karen used art to cope with some of her demons, and she had this place set up in her garage where she would do her art, and it just seemed like such a natural fit for her. I just think that this is something good that came out of something so terrible. And when I'm here, it just makes me feel very happy. And I kind of say to her, Karen, do you see what's going on? You know, how do you feel about this? And because I do think she would just love it. I think she would be here and she would be doing all kinds of things. And then, you know, when I leave, it's just good for my heart. It is.
Pat Swain lives in Port Townsend. The Karen Korn Project is open every Tuesday evening at St. Paul's Episcopal Church in Seattle.